I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome back to Radio Times. Our guest is Femi Kuti, Nigerian composer and musician, the eldest son of musician and activist Fela Kuti, known as the father of Afrobeat. Femi Kuti started playing alto sax in his father's band when he was a teenager. He began his own band, Positive Force, more than 25 years ago and has been touring and recording ever since. He's in Philadelphia to perform tonight at World Cafe, part of a worldwide tour. And like his father, Femi Kuti is political, although his approach is less confrontational. He's an ambassador for Amnesty International. We're going to play selections from some of his albums and talk about his music, his life, Nigeria, and changing politics through song. And Femi Kuti, a great pleasure. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're very welcome. How do you gear up for a world tour? I know you're kind of the beginning stages.
My band and I always work in Nigeria, so I mean we should be always prepared to be on a tour anytime. So we play 2 times a week, 5 hours a night, and so we're always physically ready, mentally ready to take off anytime.
And why did you want to come to Philadelphia?
I go anywhere my agent books me, but I've been here about maybe 6-7 times now, maybe 8, and I mean, I love Philadelphia. I really love touring the States.
Do you?
Yes.
Just because it's a place you either know or don't know, or?
Well, I love my fan base, so to speak, but then I love touring in the bus because it's when you come from where I come from in Lagos, no electricity, bad roads. It's amazing the highways here. I mean, I'm always fascinated with this, and I just dream of Africa being like this one day. And it gives me courage to go back home and say, "Man, I was in the States, and you need to feel this peace on the road."
I do want to pick up on that, but I'm curious about your band, Positive Force. You began it, what, almost 30? We were doing the math before the show began, almost 30 years ago.
Yes, the band was formed in 1986, December the 13th.
My. And why is it called Positive Force?
Because at that time I left my father, and everybody was so upset with me, and I wanted them to know it was for positive reasons. But this took them like nearly a decade to really accept my reasons for leaving, because my father was so huge, and it's like a big taboo. You never go against your family in Africa. And when I made that kind of move, it was like, how dare you? Uh-huh. And then not just an ordinary family, this is Fela Kuti. So it was hell for me for like a decade.
And how did your father feel about it? Did he feel the same way?
Yes, he was very upset at the beginning. It took him about 6 years to get it off his mind. But I turned back, I decided to just take that route. And it was a very big decision in my mind. But I really believed in what I was doing. And I knew I had to. I never wanted to be. I mean, I was being groomed to be my father. I wore clothes like him, shoes like him, dressed like him, and I just never really felt comfortable. I wanted to be me. I wanted my pain. I wanted my suffering. I wanted my success. I didn't want the final outcome of being like a copycat of my father. And if I was going to be a failure, I wanted to be the failure in my own doing, not because looking in my old age and saying, oh, my father's at fault or this is at fault. I wanted to make my move. Even if I was going to fail, I knew it was very possible that it was a wrong move, but I had to take that move.
Were you scared? Scared to leave that world of your father?
I loved my father, so I wasn't scared. And I didn't like a lot of things going on in his organization. I thought people took too much advantage of him, and this really hurt me a lot. I mean, we're on tour, people abused his sincerity, people abused his love, and when you love your father and you see all this going on around, it hurts you, and I couldn't bear to. I'll give you an example. We're on tour, and his band, people he tours with, we'll just take towels from the hotel. Then the hotel management comes down crying, "Where are my towels? Where, 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 where?" This happened so many times on the road. In France, there was a tour we had in Toulouse, and the manager of the hotel stopped the bus, and he said they had stolen all his towels. And my father said, no, it couldn't be him. Stop. This is racism. And he said, okay. And this was a big problem. So he says he insists he wants his towels back. So my manager asked his tour manager to check the bags of
the suitcases of all the musicians.
And then they did see towels, towels, towels. You know, it was very embarrassing. And my father was so upset. And, you know, he was never like this. But everybody kept doing things they were not supposed to do, like fighting in the hotel, breaking up the hotel. Then he had all this. I mean, he was touring. The first tour he went in Berlin was he toured with like 73 people. Then he cut his band down to 43. And these are people who, I mean, they arrived Europe or America and they were just like overwhelmed. And, I mean, these are people that were at a very big disadvantage in Nigeria. I could understand the problem, but then if you did love my father and understood what he was doing, you wouldn't arrive places like this and give him a bad image. So, and this fell back on him. Nobody will say it was Fela's band. Everybody just says Fela, and you are his child or his daughter, his son. You feel that pain because you want the success of your father or mother, so to say. So this really hurt me, and it got to a point where I just had enough. I couldn't go on the road with them anymore.
Do you run a tight ship yourself?
Very, very. I mean, everybody knows. I mean, even with my band, they tried this a couple of times, but they knew where I stood, and I would dismiss you immediately if you were caught wrongly. Mm. I had to get rid of you.
How old were you when you started playing alto sax?
I was 16 going 17. Yes.
I mean, a teenager. I mean, wasn't like you were a five-year-old playing sax.
No, but I started at 8, and he gave me his trumpet at that time because he stopped playing the trumpet. But he gave me the trumpet with no teacher. So I just had the trumpet. His cousin taught me the scale of C major, and then he disappeared. And there was nobody else again, so I dropped the sax. Then he happened to pick up the saxophone, my father, and then he asked me one day, I came back from school, do you want to play the sax? I said, yes, I want to play the sax. So he gives me a sax, of course, with no teacher as well.
But did he become your teacher, or you taught yourself?
He got his band leader, who is the Egyptian Babani, to teach me. He taught me for 2 weeks, but my mother was very upset because she wanted me to go to school in England, like he did. He wanted me to get the best education, and he didn't want me to have, so to say, the colonial kind of education. So he wanted me to go to Ghana. So there was this big fight in the family. I want my son to go to England. No, he must go to Ghana. Then, unfortunately, I ended up going nowhere. So I bought myself a saxophone tutor, and this was how I started.
Well, I do want to play one of your songs. This is from a 2011 album. This is Africa for Africa. This is for our listeners. So we've been talking a little bit about your music and a little bit about your life. And let's listen to this song, Africa. again, Femi Kuti's song Africa for Africa from his 2011 album. And, I mean, you know, those horns, the rhythms, it's just, it's so contagious. Don't you think?
Thank you. Contagious.
In the best sense of that word.
I understand. I understand. I never had that description before with my music.
Oh, really?
But thank you.
Well, I hope you're not taking it as an insult, because I did not mean it that way at all.
No.
Only because we're sitting here listening to it, and you can't not move.
Thank you. It's the objective, really. So.
And what's the message of this song, Africa for Africans?
Now we
Africa
need,
for Africa,
we need
say.
To tell our story. We need to love Africa. I think after colonialism and the slave trade and all that, Africa still doesn't want to accept this history because of the wrong education we have got, and we have bad leaders who just take us away from our culture, our tradition, and accepting this history and dealing with this history and dealing with our lives and understanding that we are brothers and sisters. We have to understand slavery, we have to understand and build this foundation from this history to come together and love one another. We have to wait for Europe to tell us there is farming in Ethiopia. We have to wait for Europe to tell us about a scandal here. We need to tell the story. We need to deal with this story. And I believe if we tell the story ourselves, then we can deal with it and find a way to come out of this mess that we're in.
About a minute before our first break here, but obviously writing a song like this, you believe that music can change people's attitudes, minds about things.
It could even be a love story. Take, for instance, Stevie Wonder's I Just Called to Say I Love You.
Oh,
I mean, you're in love and you just call your girlfriend, I just called to say I love you. So it changes. Music helps heal. Music helps. Music gives you joy. Music makes you... Music, it's music. So I do believe music has a very... probably the largest role to play in global affairs.
But what you're also telling us is that colonialism, I mean, that sort of legacy, the history of colonialism still hangs over
Definitely.
Countries in Africa.
Definitely. Not just Africa, the whole world. Even you can take African Americans here. They don't want to deal with this history. Everybody runs away from this history. And I believe we need to face this history. For the world, for global affairs to move forward, we need to deal with this history.
Well, let's take that short break. We'll get back to our conversation. That's Femi Kuti, our guest in this hour of Radio Times. He's a Nigerian composer and musician, and he's brought his band Positive Force to Philadelphia. In fact, they are performing tonight at World Cafe. This is part of a worldwide tour. We've been talking a bit about his life, about music. We're going to talk more about all of that, also talking about Nigeria. And sorry to say, our phone system is down, but you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Femi Kuti saying that our infrastructure works here, but apparently not our phones today on Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
great. This is only the beginning by our guest Femi Kuti from his 2013 album No Place for My Dream. That's fabulous.
Thank you.
I didn't say contagious this time. I said no, that's fabulous.
No, it was. I'm laughing because sometimes it surprises me.
Listening to your own music?
Yes, sometimes.
What were you hearing? What were you hearing?
I mean, it's a long time I wrote that song, tune, and sometimes it proves to me when I listen back like this that the composer isn't truly, he's just like a medium for higher forces to use to express something abstract from outer space that we do not really understand musically. Yeah.
I mean, that's what you hear coming from your musicians.
Yes, from me as well. I mean, writing the song, if you ask me where I get it from, I can never tell you. So it comes, and so I believe higher forces just use, like I'm just a medium for expression of some sort of musical form.
You are a composer. Does that mean you write notes down? Or
yes, like I told you, I never went to school, so yeah. I just hear the sound and I can quickly run to my horn or the piano, find the notes quickly. And the way we play in Africa, it's very easy for us. And the way I watched my father, he used to write, but I had to find an easier way because I can't write to teach people. So we use a tonic solfa. So I will now tell them, this is what I want, for instance. Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. And you, as an African, especially in Nigeria, you have to understand the tonic solfa. So I'll just play the notes for them. I will tell them the notes I want, which key, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And you have to be very fast in grasping this information I will pass to you. And this gives you, this is part of the criteria of being able to play in my band, because we don't write music down. So you have to be fast. So I arrive this shrine, for instance.
And this is the where you play in,
yes,
in Lagos.
In Lagos. Yeah. And I'll just say, okay, this is what I want. Basis, I want blah, 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 blah. He must be able to play it immediately. He has like seconds to be able to understand what I'm talking about. Okay, the guitarist, I want these chords, blah, 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 blah. Keyboardist, I want this. Now the horn section, blah. This is what I want you to play. So I play it one time for them. They must be able to get it immediately.
Wow. How do you find your musicians? I mean, that takes an extraordinary ability to, in a sense, to read your mind, but also know the instrument so well.
Yes, but this is the criteria to be able
to
play my band.
I understand.
And I mean, by the time they play with me, they are able to do anything, and many of them are able to express themselves anywhere else. I mean, but then when you understand, especially a country like America or Europe, where music is very to be a great musician, you have to work and work and work, hours and hours of practice. This is not really the culture in Africa. Being with my father and traveling and reading a lot of books on Miles Davis or Dizzy Gillespie or people like this, I understood this fact. And this is what I try to bring and be part of our culture now, because it was African and we have lost this, like I said, through bad structures and people having the wrong impression about being an artist. It's just coming back that people are now saying, okay, they're accepting because of people like my father that, yes, okay, it's a good profession to be. If you say you wanted to become a musician in my father's days, it was very upsetting. And now people now are accepting it because of how America has, over the years, used music to influence a lot of people. And so I take this kind of attitude and say, look, if you want to be a musician, it's like becoming a lawyer or a doctor. You have to work and work and work. So when you join my band, you have to practice and practice and practice. And it's not like they're not good, but there's a standard you have to reach. And the only way you can get to this standard is by practicing hours and hours and hours. And many of my musicians have fallen by the wayside. Huh. Those that have remained, they are of good standards right now.
And what do you do to you're performing tonight at World Cafe in West Philadelphia.
Yes.
Are there things you do before a concert to kind of get yourself?
I have a tour manager who
a tour manager
who is my engineer as well.
Yeah.
And he says, okay, I understand. So he did an interview with everybody. How many hours you practice a day? 3 hours. How many hours you practice a day? Say, what's your problem? You wake up and you're practicing 12 hours and then you don't stop and you keep on practicing. And so he says, why? So I'm like that. There was a day we toured, we were in Italy, and we arrived, and I started practicing from like 7 in the morning to like 8, 10 in the night, just playing the trumpet at the back of the bus. And this was the first time we met, and he was like, what's your problem? You know, but it's the only way I can find to relax my senses. Mm-hmm. And I mean, when you have so much negativity around you, especially in Africa, there's only one way you can hide, not hide, find other means, especially when you cannot do anything about those problems and you don't want to be violent about your approach. I think the only way I can find inner peace is to keep on practicing and trying to bring good numbers to console myself as well as people that listen to my music, because the suffering is so bad that you do need something to keep you alive and well.
I said in my introduction that you're political, clearly, but not as confrontational as your father.
You agree
with that?
No, at all.
Not at all?
At
okay.
all. I think I'm probably as, but you cannot compare my time with my father's time. My father's time was in the 70s and 80s where he was confronting, and he was the only voice in Nigeria. And you could even say Africa, apart from people like Mandela, but he wasn't a musician. He was locked up, so he was silenced. Kwame Nkrumah was overthrown. Lumumba was killed. So he was the only voice, and he paid a very high price at this time. And he opened the door of freedom of speech for us in Nigeria. So when I speak today, of course, it would be very hard to arrest me. But I have had my own threats and things like this. And people say I don't mention names. If you check my songs, there's no name I've not mentioned. These new songs are right there. So I think people, because of what my father did, people misjudge me. But this does not upset me, because I do understand my father's story. And of course, I understand my story too. And so if somebody hasn't made or done their research properly, then I'm forced to educate him or her. And then, but I believe I am as confrontational. And then I did participate in my father's life, like for example, taking the mock coffin of his mother to the headquarters of the presidential palace. I was there on that day. I was arrested several times in my father's house because I moved away from my mother. I ran away from my mother to move with my father. So I spent 6 years with my father. And at this time, I was part of many of the beatings and the arrests that went on. So people don't really know my story. What is the difference between my father and I? I'm more of a quiet person.
A quiet person.
Yes. My father can't sleep without a lot of noise. I need peace and quiet around me. I hate so many people making noise. My father could not sleep without hearing all this chaos. So we're very different, yet very similar.
Let me reintroduce you. That's musician and composer and activist Femi Kuti, who joins us in this hour of Radio Times. We've been playing some of his music, talking about his approach to music, also the fact that he is the eldest son of Afrobeat legend Fela Kuti. And our guest is currently on a world tour with his band Positive Force, and they are performing tonight at World Cafe in Philadelphia. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. There was an election recently in Nigeria. You have a new president, President Buhari. I was doing some research on him.
Yes.
He organized a coup in 1983.
Yes.
But he also was behind your father's arrest at that time.
Yes.
Sentenced to something like 5 years in...
10 years.
10 years in prison.
Yes.
He was then overthrown a couple of years later.
By Bangida, yes.
And was your father then released from prison?
Yes,
after
because
that?
The judge confessed that Buhari instructed him to jail my father, even though he, the judge, appealed that my father was not guilty. But the instruction came directly from Buhari that he must jail my father, and he went to plead with my father in prison. And they sent him to one of the worst prisons in Nigeria, up north, Maiduguri, where you have the Boko Haram right now. So they believed if they sent him there because of the fanatical attitude of religion, probably he would not even survive. So he was sent there for many reasons. And so, but I think the judge understood what was happening, went there, apologized. And unfortunately, my father, he has a very big mouth. He doesn't know how to keep a secret. So as soon as the judge apologized. He quickly sent for his brother. He told one of the wardens to please go back to Lagos, and he needs to see his brother, and his brother would pay his transportation. So the warden went. My father's brother came back, saw him, and quickly told him what happened, what the interaction. The judge never denied in public or to anybody. He did apologize, and it was all over. So as soon as the coup happened, this was the reason Babangida had to release my father. And then the judge was dismissed.
Buhari is quoted as saying, you know, that now he's a Democrat. He's converted to supporting democracy. Do you buy that?
It's very hard. If you live through his regime, then that's very hard too. He seems to me like somebody that wants power so badly. But then, having said this, I will not want to put my mind on negativity. I do. I mean, if we do have another bad leader, we're going to be in bigger trouble. Africa, so as much as I don't feel comfortable, I still hope and pray that things get done properly, because the suffering, like I said, in Nigeria, I don't think the people can take more of this. So if the government does perform, good for everybody. If we do find a way to have electricity, good healthcare service, good roads, good education for the kids, and all these things, then good for us. But if it doesn't work, then we should be ready to cry foul again.
It was called a pretty transparent and fair election. Again, is that what you saw?
Of course it wasn't. There were many. What I saw was if Buhari did not win, this is speaking objectively, there were a lot of people that would not have accepted the results. Now, he only won from the stats that we saw, by 3 million votes. That is no way a majority. Mm-hmm. Now, if the president, if he was a typical attitude, if he had a typical attitude of an African leader, he could have had many reasons to annul the elections. So I think he was probably advised, probably from international forces, that look, there is, especially the support in the north for Buhari, they will have never accepted a negative result. So he was probably advised for peace, to just accept this result and not cause any problem. So I believe this is what happened. From my understanding, following the elections objectively, I believe this is what happened. Because if he was a problematic African leader, he could have just said many reasons. There were many reasons he could have not annulled their elections, which is typical of African regimes.
You mentioned Boko Haram, and you know, we obviously follow that from thousands of miles away in this country, but just the sort of horrifying stories of girls, boys as well,
yes,
being kidnapped and, you know, forced into...
You know, it's very depressing when they use just the girls as the foundation to tackle Boko Haram. There was a time Boko Haram entered the dormitory of some boys and slaughtered about 56 of them in their sleeps, and nobody said anything. This was so sad. And then they had been abducting so many girls before this. But then, if talking about the 200 girls will get people to wake up to Boko Haram, okay, good again.
Yeah.
Like, I'm somebody that, as long as the work gets done, I mean, if you want peace, then whatever motivates people to wake up to that call of, look, we need to act quickly before it's too late, then good.
You know, you mentioned this several times, but it often feels as if the leadership, whether it's military or political leadership in Nigeria, other countries in Africa, not all the countries in Africa, do not represent their people. I mean, many of your songs are about these corrupt people who are...
Could you tell me a country in Africa that truly represents its people?
Maybe South Africa? I don't know.
No, of course not.
I'm no expert, believe me.
Excuse me. Then we can talk about South Africa. Right now, the people of South Africa don't want foreigners in their country. They have had this killing of even Nigerians and Zimbabweans and everybody. How did the ANC arrive at such a situation? How did they? This is South Africa that had apartheid, and Africans came behind this country to stop apartheid. We fought in our own way. All these countries donated so much money, campaigned against white domination in South Africa, and then suddenly the people don't know this history, and they're attacking countries that helped them find freedom. So how did the ANC miss this education to educate their people on this topic, for instance? And then...
Wait, are you saying that this is true for all countries in Africa? That they're represented by corrupt leadership?
Yes. I mean, we don't have leaders like Kwame Nkrumah, for instance, or Lumumba, for instance. Or, I mean, I don't see the African country today that you can say... the people are totally happy, or the infrastructures are working, or when they even meet in the Organization of African Unity, that they're talking for progress for their people. Look, like I said, I'm amazed when I come to Europe or America, you can travel by train practically to anywhere, not just any kind of train, the best trains. Look at the roads, six lanes going, look at the highways. And you stop, you see stop centers. I mean, and why can't African leaders, they all come here, their children go to school here. Why can't they see this and want this for for Africa? Why can't I go in a train from Lagos to Johannesburg, for instance, Nairobi? Not just any kind of train, the best train. Why can't we have railway lines? Why can't we have roads? So they should be sitting and say, look, we need to plan for Africa. We need to do things for Africa. And when you do this, then people will see this beautiful continent and Africa will be the envy of the world. I mean, this dream is so clear.
We're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation, talking with a Nigerian musician and activist, Femi Kuti. And again, he is here in Philadelphia performing tonight with his band at World Cafe. We're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Politics in Africa from our guest Femi Kuti's 2011 album Africa for Africa. And again, he's Afrobeat composer and musician. He's brought his band to Philadelphia, part of a world tour, performing tonight at World Cafe in West Philadelphia. He is a political activist, as you well know, also ambassador for Amnesty International. We've been talking about politics in Nigeria, also about music, a little bit about his father, Fela Kuti. And again, to join the conversation, send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. That song kind of picks up on what we were talking about. And, are you optimistic, pessimistic about Nigeria, about the political situation? As you said, you come to America and you say you've got roads, you've got electricity. We don't have enough of that in Nigeria.
Of course, I have to. I'm not, I'm first a realist to deal with the situation, but then I have to be optimistic. So if you had to judge me in that sense, I would say, yes, I have to be optimistic.
Just because it's too, almost too depressing not to be?
No. Then what is the fight about? If you are going to go to battle to lose, then why go to battle at all? So I don't think we're doing what we're doing because we don't believe there will be light at the end of the tunnel. So that I feel I might not live to see this, like Marcus Garvey didn't see what he wanted, or Martin Luther King, or Malcolm X, or Lumumba, or my father. So, but if they did not play their part, people like me will not be aware of this history. So I think people like me have to just do what we have to do and keep people informed and let people know that a lot of people are concerned and people want real change. And we just have to keep on agitating for this change. And we have to understand that we're humans. Human beings will always be human beings. And we have to always, perfection is very hard to come by. And we just have to keep on striving for it.
Let me talk a little bit more about some of your music, largely playing alto sax, but you also play trumpet, you also play piano,
yes.
Other instruments as well?
Yeah, I mean, I touched everything in my life. I did this because I wanted to understand when I'm telling the bassist, for instance, what to do, but I don't play many of these instruments professionally. Now, the piano, for instance, I just wanted to understand some chords, which I wanted to infuse in my music because of the tempo of my music, and I wanted it to be like the undercurrent of my music. So I will not say I'm like a Jimmy Smith or anybody like this, but I just had to find a kind of technique and to find this technique to suit what I wanted, what I felt, to make my music what it is today. So it was why I picked up the piano, and but the trumpet, I think because it was my first instrument, I've always loved it and wanted to play it. And about 10 years ago, I picked up the courage to pick it up again. And everybody around me was like, oh, you're too old, you'll never be able to do this. And I'm not one to let people bring me down as such. So I said, okay, let's see. It might take me a long time. I mean, I sounded awful at the beginning.
Really?
Everybody was like, please spare me. Now, a lot of people don't even realize I'm playing quite well now.
Oh,
time.
Yes, exactly, exactly. You are an ambassador for Amnesty International.
Yes.
Why that organization? Why is that important?
Because
to you?
I love the fight of Amnesty. Amnesty fights for justice for people and things like this, and I love what Amnesty stands for.
Which is obviously about human rights.
Yes, human
rights.
And
also people who have been
incarcerated wrongly and things like this, and questioning the death penalty and things like this. So I like the ideology behind Amnesty.
You played a place called, or there's a place, I guess, in Lagos called, is it The Shrine or Shrine?
The Shrine.
The Shrine. I mean, where your dad played, right?
Yeah, but it wasn't. The Shrine we play now is the Shrine we built is the new Shrine we built in honor of my father. And we expanded it to be a place where it's a shrine, where it's for great Africans who have fought for the emancipation of Africa. So it's a place where we pay homage to people like great names I've mentioned, Thomas Sankara, my grandmother, Mandela, people like this. And we pay homage to them. So it's a shrine, my father, people like this. And but the old shrine, my father was tricked. He thought he bought the land. So he built on it. Apparently it was a lease. And when he said to have all these problems with the government, as usual, the government got to the landowners and he was in court till he died. And they wanted their land back. And he never knew through his management or somebody around him, mm-hmm. he thought he bought it and he was tricked into it being a lease. And so he was in this battle till he died. Now the law in Nigeria says the disease cannot, you cannot take the battle of the disease on land issues. So when the disease dies, you, that case is, you lose, automatically lose that case. Nobody, so the land.
So once he died, that was.
That was the end of the case. So
wow.
We tried to talk to the landowners too, please, because he's such a great man who love, it. It's going to be a great tourist center, blah, blah, blah. They completely refused. So this convinced my elder sister and myself that the government was involved in trying to frustrate us. So we got this deal with Universal Records to license my father's back catalog. So I was like my mother's favorite. So because
You were your mother's favorite?
Kind of. Everybody says I am, so I probably am.
That's what your sister says, right?
Yeah, that's what they say. So I believe she is my father's favorite, right? So
right.
We have this big argument. And so they got me to convince my mother to, because she inherited a large chunk of this money, because she was still legally married. So she didn't want anything. She wanted to move to back to England. But I managed to convince her that, look, we need to use this money to build a shrine for my father. Okay. And then I managed to convince her. So probably somewhere secretly, somewhere.
Interesting.
And then we build this big place. It's about 5 times bigger than the old place. So it's very huge. And so we managed to build the shrine.
Your father, he died in 1997.
Yes.
Right. Died of AIDS.
Yes.
Which I guess was in the sort of, you know, the really sort of the earlier parts of of that horrible disease.
Yes.
He knew he had AIDS?
No.
He didn't know?
No.
What did he think he had? Do you know?
What did he think he had? I think he thought he was going through some kind of transition. He really believed in spiritual matters, so I think he felt probably God was transforming his body, or probably what he was trying to tell us is, yes, I'm dying and I'm transcending into another level of human life or something, and probably we couldn't understand what he was saying, probably. I would not be able to tell you directly exactly what he was saying, but he was always on from a long time before this disease. He was always talking about spiritual development. I mean, these were the kind of conversations I had secretly with my father. We were always talking about higher forms of life and is it possible for life outside planet Earth and things like this. And we strongly believed in this, and we tried to use the African culture and tradition to express what were they doing in Egypt, what were the pyramids about, etc. What was education in Africa about? It was about higher form of life. Of we knew we were animals and we had to understand we had to develop to be human beings, but then there was another stage of spiritual development and blah blah blah. So probably he knew that, okay, I might be dying and I'm transcending to something outside this life.
You wrote a song called 97.
Yes.
In your father's honor.
Yes.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess, and I also read that you had a sister died that same year.
Yes,
as well.
He was wrongfully diagnosed for, she had cancer, and she was diagnosed for bleeding ulcer. So they operated on her, and apparently when they say when you operate, the cancer just spreads very fast, and it was a wrong diagnosis, and unfortunately she died.
Yeah. Did you see Fela? This was the Broadway show about your father.
Yes, I did, and I cried and cried and
did
cried.
Did you?
Yes, I
because
cried. Because I can be a big baby, don't worry.
I like it when men are big babies, actually. You cried because it just brought back your father?
It brought back so many memories of the 70s, of 60s. It brought so it was such an honor what they did, and the cast was so involved. I mean, it was so emotional. I could not believe people would be so committed into telling the story so well. A lot of people criticize it for not being Nigerian enough, but I think they did not see the objective of the story. If you had brought a play by Nigerians to tell to Americans, probably the audience, the international audience, not just the American audience, would be saying, what did they say? What's it about? But taking it and bringing it to Broadway, having that international concept, everybody understood the play. Everybody understood Fela's life. So you have big stars like Jay-Z, every Will Smith, everybody is involved saying, wow, what kind of person is this? Wow. I mean, it was magnificent. It was huge. And I think the objective of the play was met. And when you think like this, I mean, what could you have to say? I tried, because I was very critical, because I never went to watch it. And when I decided to go, I wanted to go with very critical mind, and they blew me up. They blew me to pieces.
Has it been performed in Lagos?
Yes,
or
it was. That was one of the criteria I made. Said I told Stephen Hendel that if I ever came to watch it, he will have to promise me he'll bring it to the Shrine, because if it's a play about Fela, it has to be at the Shrine. Mm. So he came to my room in New York and says, "Okay, he promises me." So I now went to watch it.
Well, on that note, Femi Kuti, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're very welcome. And he's an Afrobeat composer, musician, and he has brought his band Positive Force to Philadelphia, performing tonight at World Cafe. And this is a version of Water, No Get Enemy. It's a song originally recorded by our guest father, Fela Kuti, and his band Africa 70 in 1975. This version appears on Femi Kuti's 2004 live album called Africa Shrine. Let's listen.
If you're trying to make home, I want to you.